So let's take a few minutes now in meditation. And I'll invite you to close your eyes if you like. And you might want to put down anything that you might be holding so that you can relax into the moment. And let's just breathe. Breathing in. And breathing out. And as we breathe in this time, we let that breath of God kindle the Christ Spirit within us. It is the Spirit that takes us deeper and deeper into this holy instant. It is this Christ Spirit that gives us hope for ourselves and for others and for our relationship with the Spirit of God. So breathing into that Christ Spirit that is already within us. It only has to be awakened. We only have to become more conscious of what already exists. So breathe in again and feel that Christ consciousness move and vibrate within us. It is that constant friend, that constant companion on this spiritual journey that we're all taking. So let's just be aware of that Christ consciousness. And as we move into the silence, let's just be with it and feel it and experience it and let it fill us up in the silence. Spirit of God, Christ consciousness deep within me, let me understand, feel, and touch, and hear the Spirit of God deep inside. That has always said the same thing, that in spite of mistakes, you are the child of God. The Spirit of God is well pleased with exactly who and what you are. And so it is, God. So it is. Namaste.
Hallelujah.
Thank you both. Before I forget, this isn't really part of my talk today, but before I forget, if you're not aware, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore were the co-founders of the Unity Movement, and Charles Fillmore was the writer, and his most popular book was Christ in Me, The Hope of Glory. And it's a very cool book. Charles Fillmore was not the best writer. Hey, he had other strengths. But that one, Christ in Me, The Hope of Glory, is pretty good. It's pretty straightforward. And it really takes you on a deep journey. So I invite you to check that one out. See it online. Look at the library because it's there. Well, today is that first Sunday of Advent. And as I mentioned before, not everybody likes, within the Unity Movement, not everybody likes doing Advent. I kind of like it because we don't have that many rituals and ceremonies. It's fun to have some once in a while. So, there's a different theme each week during the month of December. Advent is the Latin word that means to come to. And so the whole concept of Advent with its different themes is for us to find different ways to come to the Spirit of God, to find different ways to come to the Spirit of God that's already deep within us and surrounds us and is everywhere, is all places. So the idea is, yeah, let's take a look at that. And do we tie it in with the birth of Jesus? Sure, of course we do. But it's also something really important and something really spiritually significant, just in and of itself. Now, I think when we talk about different ways of coming to, somebody just last week asked me about the banner up here. And I brought that in when I started a few years ago. And what I said was, there's only one God, but there's lots of different pathways to that God. And so we want to honor all the different kind of pathways. And Advent is this wonderful reminder that, oh yeah, we're supposed to come to the Spirit of God however we get there. When we take a look at that and the role of hope, the power of hope, I think it's that hope is often thought of as this gentle fairy tale kind of ephemeral thing. And as I mentioned 3 weeks ago when Hope over here got baptized, I said, that's not what hope's about. Hope's not this gentle, sweet, tender little thing that means nothing. Hope gets knocked down. Hope gets the crud kicked out of it. But what makes it hope is it keeps getting back up. That's what makes it hope. That's what takes us on a journey that we can't even exactly comprehend right now. But man, we keep diving into it, don't we? You know, we keep coming and we keep greeting one another. And unless you're much different than me, unless you're much different than anybody else who's here, you're really good on Sunday at church time, right? Not so good the rest of the week. But that's okay. That's what it's about. The hope is that we're going to keep getting better and better and better and better. I mean, that's one of the reasons that we love, that I love, to have you get involved in a volunteer group, because then you end up meeting a couple times a month and keep doing different things and you develop friendships here. And then there becomes a reason to stay here and be better and better. Hope is this powerful force for ourselves and for others and for the nature of the Spirit of God that's deep within us. Hope is this powerful force of the world. And again, not because it's airy-fairy, because it's tough. It's tougher than nails. Hope is this sweet little old lady who you don't think you'd do a thing and ends up beating the crud out of you. Hope is strong. And so I think I did this a couple years ago, but I wanted to do it again. Today is the 69th anniversary of something, this very day. Today is the 69th anniversary of Rosa Parks. Yeah. It was on December 1st, 1955. And I'm sure a lot of you know the story. I'm sure a few of you don't. So just in Mobile, Alabama, the law was that on a bus, if the bus got full or fuller, then a black person had to give up their seat to a white person. And very interestingly, what was intriguing about that was the bus driver was left to be the enforcer of the law. And like anybody else, some of them were jerks and some of them were just fine about it. But, so the story, which I think several of you know, Rosa Parks is coming home from work. She's in what's called the colored section. And the bus fills up. And so the driver has a sign that sits on the back of the seats of the bus that tells you where the colored section begins. And so as it filled up with more white people, the driver, a guy named William Blake, would move the sign further and further back. And then, so finally, when the bus had filled, he told Rosa Parks that she was going to have to give up her seat to the to one of the white women who were there who had complained. And the guy who was asking her, the bus driver who was asking her, fits into the story very interestingly. Here's what you had to do if you were black in Mobile. At that time, you had to get on the bus in the front door and deposit your fare, and then you had to leave and go to the back door and re-enter. So there's this driver, William Blake, who didn't like her very much, because she was actually a well-known figure in the NCAAP movement at that time in Mobile. So the week before, she'd gotten on the bus, paid her fare, got off the bus to enter in the back door, and he drove off. So there was some history there. So anyway, so this December 1st, she refused to give up her seat. Blake said, if you don't give up your seat, then I have to call the police and you get arrested. And she said, do what you have to do. And what she said was, I didn't give up the seat, she said, because I would have to know for once and for all. What rights I had as a human being and a citizen. I don't know why I'm reacting like this, but isn't it stunning how often we think we can take away the rights of people we don't happen to like? And we think that's okay. And Rosa Parks later said that she wanted to do this. Thanks. She wanted to do this as a sign of hope for herself, for other black people, but she said, more importantly, just for the good of the country, that's why she wanted to get involved in this. I mean, isn't that a powerful notion of hope? She was fined $10, and I believe it was $3 in court fees, and that $13 in today's money would be $167. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, if I suddenly had a bill of $167 that I was planning on, yeah, we'd find a way to pay it, but man, that'd kind of hurt. That'd stretch things out for a little bit. Well, one of the reasons I'm bringing up Rosa Parks is because I think that we're entering the Christmas season, and I think, as many of you know, Jesus was famous for breaking the laws he didn't like. I mean, that's what he did. He did things like heal people on the Sabbath. He and his disciples would eat with unclean people. They would... and by the way, who got to determine whether they were unclean? The Pharisees and the Sadducees, the priests of the day. And here's one that was really shocking. He would talk to women. Yeah, he would heal women. And of course, the one that really ticked off the Pharisees and Sadducees is that Jesus would call out the Pharisees and the Sadducees for being hypocrites. Because and what he was saying was, if somebody's blind and it's the Sabbath, who cares? You heal them. You know, if somebody's hungry, you feed them. You know, you don't wait for a particular day of the week. And one that really bugged him was the Pharisees and the Sadducees would pray. They would scream on the street corners in ancient Jerusalem, and that would be their prayer. And Jesus said, you know what? The place you pray is at home, by yourself. And it got mistranslated as praying in your closet. But what it really meant was praying in your inner sanctum, the quietest part of your home. And he said, and you do that away from other people. That's where you pray. That's when you pray. And he said, so the Pharisees and Sadducees who were praying to be seen, he said, they have their reward. They got seen. That was what they were after. They weren't after helping other people. They weren't even particularly after helping themselves. They were praying to be seen. Isn't that an interesting one? That one really sticks with me. That what we do, particularly when it comes to more spiritual things, more holy things, like prayer, like meditation, if we do it for show, yeah, well, we already have been rewarded. People saw us. Yeah. So how good, how useful to take it inside and just let that be a natural, spiritual, sacred, holy part of us. So like I said, I think there were similarities there. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say Rosa Parks was Jesus. That's not my point. My point was they both liked to break the laws. and they both liked to break the laws that didn't really seem to make any sense. Yeah. So they were after pursuing some natural kind of truth. Now, by the way, it's not like Jesus was this private person who tried to stay away from crowds, you know, and be completely by himself. He has some showman in him. And it's the same thing for Rosa Parks. It's not like Rosa Parks was this completely innocent person who just decided she wouldn't give up her bus seat one day. No. The NCAAP in Mobile had been looking for somebody who could be sort of the face of that movement there, and they settled in on Rosa Parks. So, much like Jesus, I think 2,000 years later, you had Rosa Parks, and I just picked her randomly, right? Just because today was the day for it. I mean, just think about the numbers of people who've said, no, I want to stand for something. I want to draw the line right here. I want my life to be meaningful because I stood for something that was right. I think that's the power of hope. I mean, it's a great theme for the day, that what we want to do is we want to experience hope for ourselves, that we stand for something, that we have some principles. That doesn't mean we all have to go get our name in the newspapers or we don't all have to run a podcast or anything like that. All it means is, let's figure out what kind of principles that we have. And if you have 40 or 50, then you don't even have a single one. Two or three. Figure out what it is that we believe in, that we want to stand for. And then let's stand for it. Let's be it. Let's do it. So that idea of hope, this constant positive feeling that because I stand for something, because I have a couple of principles that I stand for, then what can happen is we can experience great hope for ourselves. It's always going to keep coming. And the very act of doing that, just like Jesus 2,000 years ago, just like Rosa Parks 69 years ago, when we stand for something, when we have hope that we're going to get better and you're going to get better and our world's going to get better, when we do that, then what we have is this deep hope for other people too, that they're going to show up. And I don't know about you, but for me, you know, I keep wondering what the best possible version is of myself. And I'd sure like to show up better than I do. And honestly, if the Seahawks would win more, So I thought I would just leave us today with just a reminder, because I know many of you are very conversant with this, and that is just the five basic unity principles. It's kind of like, yeah, from time to time, it's nice to have a reminder, isn't it? Oh, yeah. This is what we stand for. And there's some people that are new today, and there's some people that are new over the last couple of months. And so this might be the first time you've heard them. Cool. Okay. So here's the first unity principle. See the Spirit of God everywhere. see it in every person, see it in every situation, see it in every event, that somehow the Spirit of God is there within that individual, within that experience, within that event. So the Spirit of God is everywhere. Here's the second principle. Understand that the Spirit of God is within each person. I mean, that makes sense, right? If the Spirit of God is everywhere, then it's got to be in you, and it's got to be in her, and it's got to be in him, got to be in me. So that second one, that's pretty cool. So it's kind of like, yeah, those behaviors that I got, that I was displaying, or that somebody else might be displaying, they might not be very holy. It could be they're really, really bad. But what that says is the Spirit of God is still there inside. That it doesn't mean that the person we're looking at, or even ourselves, doesn't mean we're always choosing to see it or act on it. But it's there. So I think that's real useful. I love this notion, expression that I saw. When Patty and I were driving home, we saw electronic billboard, and it said, God has never looked in the eyes of another person without seeing love. Wow. I mean, I really like that. And when I'm on top of my game, especially at the grocery store, hey, we get on top of our game at different places, right? And I can be at the grocery store and I can see, it's all humankind there, right? You get a cross picture. So I'll see somebody who's, 450 pounds. And I think to myself, I want to see Jesus there. I want to see Christ there. I want to see God there. And I'll see somebody else who's just a complete dork. And I go, no, I want to see the Spirit of God there. I want to see Jesus there. And I think what's happening is I think, whatever you want to call it, you can call it Jesus, you can call it the Christ, or you can call it God, whatever you like. I think that force, that personage, dresses up differently. It's a test. It's a test to see, can you see God there? And that's what the individuals. And man, it's tough sometimes, isn't it? The third unity principle. Let's use our thoughts, our words, and our actions to create the world that we see. Use our thoughts and our words and our actions to create the world that we see. Because when we do that, that gives them a special role to the power of thoughts, because everything always begins with thinking. Everything begins with the idea. Everything, every new invention in the world begins with a thought. So yeah, let's watch our thoughts, but let's watch our words and our actions too. And then the fourth unity principle is use prayer and meditation as tools to get closer to the Spirit of God, to open our eyes to the Spirit of God that's already there. And you say, I just have a hard time meditating. That's okay. It takes practice. You say, I don't even know what to say when I'm praying. That's okay. It takes practice. Just jump on in there, because those are the tools. And then the last one, not enough to know these principles. Got to live them. You got to actually do it. I don't know about you. I think I used this example before, that in high school I took Spanish for 3 years, and I couldn't speak a word of it, but I always got A's on the tests. I was a good test taker, and I knew them. I just couldn't do them. I just couldn't live them. You know, and so that's, there's nothing special about it, whether or not you can recite all five basic unity principles. It's whether we live them. And that's what I want to leave you with today and this whole month of December, as we draw closer and closer and closer to Christmas. Let's see if we can't live the Spirit of God that's deep within us. And so it is. Namaste.
Will you hold the little child?